Hey there, it's Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli, and I want to chat with you about a key ingredient for a fabulous date night, feeling sexy. And come on, let's be real. What you wear plays a big part in how you rock that confidence. That's why I'm thrilled to introduce you to Quince. Quince brings you premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts starting at just $30, along with washable silk tops, 40-karat gold jewelry, and more. And guess what? All of their goodies are priced 50 to 80% lower than similar brands. By teaming up directly with top factories, Quince skipped the middleman and hands us the saving. Plus, they stick to factories with safe, ethical practices and top-notch fabrics and finishes. How awesome is that? Picking from Quince's website was tough, because they have a ton of fabulous choices. I ended up going for their 100% washable silk sleep dress in champagne. And let me tell you, my husband was floored. He's convinced whoever rocks this is in for a blast. I'm going to record some content on that dress so you can see how fabulous is that dress. Elevate your date night style with Quince. Pop over to quince.com/sexology for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sexology to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sexology.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli.
Welcome back to Sexology Podcast. I'm your host, and today we're diving into episode 382 with a fascinating discussion on sexual jealousy and compersion. Have you ever wondered what exactly makes sexual jealousy different from other jealousies in a relationship? How does it impact your intimacy? And what can you do to keep it from chilling the bedroom atmosphere? Joining us today is the exceptional Dr. Jolie Hamilton, a relationship coach and expert on non-monogamous and unconventional relationships. She's here to help us unpack these complex emotions and offer insights from her extensive research. We'll explore what triggers jealousy, how it can disrupt the couple's sex life, and strategies to manage or even transform it into something positive. And then there's compersion, often seen as jealousy's more enlightened sibling. But is it really the opposite of jealousy, or is the reality more nuanced? Dr. Hamilton will break down how this concept plays out across different relationship models, from monogamous to polyamorous and open relationships. If you're intrigued by the idea of turning jealousy into a growth opportunity, or simply curious about how to foster compersion in your relationship, Dr. Hamilton has some actionable tips to get you started. But first, let me remind you about our sponsor, Mira. If you're navigating the world of fertility, Mira's like a hormone lab right in your hand, providing 99% accurate readings that help you predict and confirm ovulation. Be sure to use promo code Dr. Mo'oli for 17% off Mira monitors and fertility consultations. Now, let's get into our conversation with Dr. Jolie Hamilton. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Sexology Podcast. It's my honor to welcome Dr. Jolie Hamilton. Dr. Hamilton, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a total pleasure to talk to you about this subject.
No, we had previous episodes on jealousy, and people have so many questions about it. Some people find it arousing. Some people find that kind of like disabling them as far as navigating through life. So tell us, how do you define sexual jealousy?
You know, I think about jealousy, and I actually don't go straight to sexual jealousy. I just think about jealousy as being an emotion, generally a glop of emotions that shows up whenever I feel a threat to a relationship I care about. And when it comes to sexual jealousy, I add in the idea that it has something to do with the idea of wanting access to sexual exclusivity or the desire to at least understand my sexual value to the other. So it's about that triangle. There's like there's an interrupter. There's something that's going to influence my relationship.
My understanding is that with envy, there's a triangle. It's not there. But with jealousy, is that a triangle? Is that the kind of differentiation?
That's it. So with jealousy, I can see the triangle. I can see that there's this valued other, there's myself in the jealous position, and then there's the perceived interrupter. The perceived interrupter doesn't have to be a real person. I can imagine that person into being, right? Which that happens all the time. We imagine that someone is flirting with our partner. We imagine that somebody who's, you know, likes their Instagram post is very interested in them. There's a million ways. But with envy, yeah, I want to be like that other person is. I want to have what they have. There's a little bit of a draw of comparison, and jealousy and envy can show up at the same time. Because if I'm envious of that perceived interrupter, now I've got both on my hands. Doesn't make anything easier.
Well, so it's not an exclusive emotion. It's wonderful to know that, like, you're not either jealous or envious. You could have the combination of emotions like any other emotions.
Exactly. And that's why it's so hard for some people to work with, is because jealousy often also comes in flavors where we have our jealousy can be tinged with anger, sadness, grief, anxiety, fear. Like, there's so much that can be tied to our jealousy. So people often feel an overwhelming onslaught of emotion, and it becomes challenging to sort it out. Ideally, we do sort it out and we start to really be with the emotions that have arisen, but it's hard. I don't want anybody to think I'm saying just because I can name it, it's super easy. No, it's still challenging for a lot of us.
And I think it's a learning skill. As a psychologist, I often kind of learn more about nuances of emotions. So something that maybe in the past felt one thing, and now as I go deeper, I kind of like discover a different number of different emotions. And it's important to know what are we tackling, because otherwise we don't know how to manage that emotion.
Right. And jealousy is an emotion that in many cultures is seen as bad, right? Like, there is a judgment on top of the emotion. So if someone is coming to me and they're saying that they're feeling a bunch of things about their relationship, they may not even be able to acknowledge their jealousy. They might instead tell me they're feeling scared, they're feeling anxious, they're feeling worried about their connection with their partner. They might tell me about how they're worried because of, oh, there's been this flirtation, or, you know, there was betrayal in the past and now I'm worried, but they can't get the word jealousy out because they've demonized jealousy. And even, you know, the American Psychological Association names, right in the definition of jealousy in their short dictionary, it says jealousy is a negative emotion. And I would not say it that way. I would say jealousy is an emotion that many of us feel is quite overwhelming, but it's not negative any more than anger is negative or sadness is negative. It's information. And if we can be with that and we can just let jealousy be the information source that it is, then we can start to tease apart the nuances of the emotion.
But I always tell my clients, you get to have your emotions, right? That, like, right, we might kind of experience a range of different emotions as long as we're not taking action based on those emotions that are contradicting with our values, then that's completely okay. As you said, jealousy is a normal emotion that many, many people experience. Is it different than different types of jealousy, like sexual jealousy? Is it something specific about it?
Yeah. So the thing with sexual jealousy that it can feel different, at least, is if we're operating from a monogamous mindset, right, then there is this layer of exclusivity around our connections, right? And so we may have decided that since we have an exclusive sexual connection to this one person, well, now jealousy, when it arises, can look like, hey, that means my partner's doing something bad and they need to fix it. And I can skip over the step, or it seems like I can skip over it, but I would never recommend anybody do this. It seems like I can skip over the step where I just be with the feeling. Like, it has shown up. Before I try to ask my partner to change what they're doing, I want to get to know what's going on here. And when it comes to sexual jealousy, a lot of us rush. We feel an immediate sense of desire to control. I want to change the situation. Or we feel very self-righteous, right? We immediately go into that betrayal mindset. And now I feel this big righteous like indignation. I want to tell you to stop. Or maybe I go to my friends and I complain and I brew up a story. And that can lead us further away from the actual connection that we want to make through jealousy. Like ideally, we bring that jealousy back into our relating and turn to our partner and acknowledge, yeah, there's jealousy present. And now we can get into the details of what actions would be warranted. What actions are in alignment with my values? Maybe it's about getting clear where our boundaries are in our relationship. Maybe it's about making sure that we have clear agreements in place. Or maybe there's some repair that needs to happen. Maybe it's time to go to a counselor, sit with a counselor and do some repair work because there has been a betrayal. But all of those things take time. And like you said, first we need to feel the feeling, then we can take our actions. But a lot of times we skip that feeling piece.
And you're right, that feeling of self-righteousness, again, I have experienced it in the past. I know many people have. And it kind of like cools down the curiosity. Like you want to get curious what's happening underneath for you, what happened in that moment, in that relationship you had with your partner or you have. And it's just like, I think when we have this overwhelming emotion, it gets in the way of those. I know your research is on jealousy. So tell us about your research.
Yeah. So I looked at jealousy first in non-monogamous individuals who they're inviting jealousy right in the door. They know that jealousy is possibly going to show up because if we're thinking about that triangle, well, if there are going to be more than two people in a relationship, then jealousy is probably going to be showing up at some point. And then I continued my research by looking at people in monogamous relationships and how they're working with their jealousy. And it's really interesting to me to see how jealousy is an intense human emotion for anyone in any relationship structure. But a lot of people haven't taken the time to really be with jealousy. And instead, what showed up in the research when I was analyzing the data is a lot of people who are practicing monogamy just hope that their monogamous connection is going to protect them from ever feeling jealous. And that, of course, doesn't play out. Like we see that happen where we imagine that I'm safe. I'm safe because I am in a monogamous relationship, but stuff happens. People cheat, or there are misunderstandings or misconstrued agreements or boundaries. And so jealousy shows up. And what happened when I was analyzing the data, there were so many people from a monogamous perspective who didn't know where they could talk about it. You know, they knew that they could complain if jealousy came up. They knew that they were allowed to get angry about it, about like, hey, my partner's doing something bad. But they didn't have conversations like, hey, you know what? Jealousy is really overwhelming. It's a lot. And sometimes it comes up and it's not even justified. There's no real jealous threat. There's no object here. So what's going on for me? So this was one of the biggest differences is in consensual non-monogamy, people are... they're getting used to the fact that we're going to have to talk about jealousy. We're going to have to talk about it in our therapist's office or in our communities and in our relationship. And in monogamy, often there is no discussion about it other than you better not ever make me jealous. And what we try to avoid, of course, tends to poke through, right? We shove that stuff away. It tends to show up where we least expect it.
Absolutely. And you're right that it's part of it. It's kind of like sometimes it's our past that we're bringing into the current relationship. So the fact that you did this on that partner saying that I didn't engage in that wouldn't be productive versus like, you know, as yourself kind of looking into these difficult emotions and examine where are they coming from. With a non-monogamous relationship, I'm glad you brought it up because some people feel like people who agree to be in a non-monogamous relationship, they never experience jealousy. So right. Is it common for people to feel jealous when they are in these agreements?
Yeah. So all relationship structures leave us still available to all emotions. So there are the occasional people who say, oh, I never feel jealousy. And that's normal. There are some people who experience very little anger in their life. They just don't, for whatever reason. They don't really have much of a response. Now, we could get into like the childhood reasons that might underlie that. But if you just think about any emotion, some people experience great joy. Some people really never experience huge joy. We're all different. So it's not that non-monogamous people never feel jealousy. In fact, most of them absolutely do. By and large, they all feel jealousy. There are these exceptions. But what they do is they treat it differently. They treat it as very normal, and they don't end their relationships just because they're feeling jealous, right? So they instead expect that jealousy is going to come up, and they take ownership. The people who work with it successfully, and this goes for monogamy too, there's usually just less conversation about it. They accept that the emotion is coming up. And just like you said earlier, they need to separate the emotion from what their actions are and make time to make sure that they've been with the emotion long enough to know that the actions that they're going to take, the agreements they're going to make, are actually in alignment with their relational values. And that takes some calm. It takes some energy to do that calming. And what I find is that people who are in non-monogamous relationships, especially for a long time, whether they practice with, you know, for even over a couple of years, usually they've had enough experience with jealousy to be like, yeah, they get a little pragmatic about it. Yeah, I'm going to have to deal with jealousy. It's going to come up. That said, there are a few people who demonize jealousy. They say, no, jealousy is an unevolved emotion. We should just transcend it. We should just magically get past it. But nothing could be further from the truth. Jealousy is there to keep us connected, right? We actually evolved it as an attachment strategy. As a little baby, we can spot jealousy in a 5 or 6 month old baby. If the caregiver turns attention to another infant, yep, you can spot jealousy. You can spot this anxiety that shows up. There's a desire to break that connection. So it's there for a reason. The question is, can we acknowledge that it's there for a reason without taking actions that actually damage our relationships instead of building them?
Such a wonderful overview. And as you were talking about childhood, and we talked about attachment in the past in this show, is that big part of it is like how our caregiver navigated world, what was happening in the world, like all of that, kind of like our temperament impact our relationship with someone we love, kind of paying attention to someone else, even in that moment. So part of these is our childhood wounds, kind of experiences we had in the past. Part of it could be like a relationship dynamic, right? Like someone is, maybe they're gaslighting you. You're seeing this, they say no. So that could be part of it. Tell us about how can we navigate, like what is happening in this complex dynamics?
Yeah. Well, it's great that you're using the word complex, because jealousy is a complex emotion. It's an emotion that comes with all of these other emotions. So the very first thing that we need to do is actually not rush to trying to fix the issue in the relational space before we've noticed, wait a minute, what's going on? Like, and actually just giving ourselves, sometimes it only takes 10 or 15 minutes to feel the emotion and to notice what's going on. But we do need to give ourselves that time. So don't skip that step. That said, if you've noticed your jealousy, you've identified what are the sensations of jealousy, and this is what turned up in my research, people who are successfully navigating jealousy, they know how to notice it in their sensations. So they notice it right away. They name it. They're like, yep, that's jealousy. Okay, I'm going to take it seriously. Then they dig into their own stuff and they figure out, yeah, what does this mean? What does this mean about my relationship? Am I feeling insecure in this relationship? Am I feeling threatened? Am I feeling a threat that's based on evidence? What do I see in this situation? And the most important question here, what does it mean about my relationship? Because I can have all these feelings, but it's the meaning I make out of the feelings that will make a huge difference in how I approach the conversation with my partner. And that's the dynamic I think you're asking about. What do I do? How do I go to my partner? How do I actually address this? So I need everybody to do those first three steps before you try to get right to the partner stuff and like dive in. So let's say you've gotten there. You know what jealousy is doing. You know the meaning you're making out of it. That fourth piece, this is the what I call navigating your needs in my jealousy roadmap. When you're navigating your needs, a lot of us don't know what our needs are. So the first steps are going to be about getting clear. What is it that I'm looking for from this relationship? What is it? What is its purpose? Is it an attachment-based relationship? Am I forming a long-term bond with this person? Is it meeting all of my needs? Is this relationship supposed to meet all of my emotional, sexual, sensual, everything needs? Or is it actually a more limited scope relationship? And if I can identify that, now I can enter into a conversation with my partner from a collaborative attitude where I actually navigate through, okay, I have these needs. What are you available for? Do you have availability to meet these needs or do you not? And receiving their actual answer will make a huge difference in how you figure out the next steps together.
And I believe that there is something empowering with naming your needs. We see all, especially in heterosexual relationships, this perspective of the women who are successful in relationship, they don't have any needs or they're not talking about their needs and their partner anticipates their needs. But that's just not what reality is. What I found working with so many people is that more clear we communicate our needs, the more successful we'll be able to kind of think what's happening. Is it me or is it the relationship?
Right. It's, you know, I work with people now who are often transitioning relationship paradigms, right? They're shifting from mono to something else. They maybe don't know exactly what they're designing, but they're shifting. And one of the most common features of that time when they're transitioning is having to reconcile with the fact that they don't know what their needs are. Not really. They may have some underlying gut sense of like, well, I'll know it in my belly when I feel it, when my needs feel met, but they don't know what their needs are. They can't articulate them. And yeah, there is in a cisgender heterosexual relationship, it is frequently a woman who not only maybe doesn't feel like she gets to have needs, but also has written a story in her head about, well, he should just know. He should just know. And if he really loved me, he would just know. And honestly, I see this in men too. They tend to verbalize it differently. They'll say it differently. But this is all about avoidance of these tender conversations that actually create our intimate connection. And so many of us spend so much energy avoiding tender conversations, the ones that would really make a difference. It's so unfortunate, but I understand why. Like it's vulnerable. It's scary to get in there and have those conversations. And there isn't a workaround for it. There is no shortcut to creating intimacy by actually sharing your needs.
Dr. Hamilton, you brought such a great point when you were talking about getting to know the sensation about jealousy in your body. I remember that like first time I noticed this emotion, like in a interpersonal, like intimate relationship, I was like 20 years ago. So a long time ago, I was in my ex's bed. He went to prepare breakfast for me. He got a text and the woman that I told him that he had an affair with her sent a text message saying that, thank you for last night. It was fabulous. So like, I remember I had this freeze response. Like usually I engage with people, like I'm all about conversation, always been a kind of quote unquote fighter and engager. But in that moment, I felt paralyzed and I left that house. And then later on, we talked about things. But what I learned then is my sensation early is like freeze response. So
yeah.
I learned to give myself compassion, saying that this is how I respond. And there will be opportunity to engage or say my part in future or not. But in that moment, the most important thing is like to taking care of myself. In the opposite part of the spectrum, we have people that they experience compersion. They feel like, okay, I love when my partner have this satisfying experience, especially when it comes to everything, but especially with the sexual partnership. Tell us more about that. What is that about?
Yeah, it is so interesting. Many of us do experience an overwhelm and we go into threat response. We freeze, we fight. Oh, a lot of us fight, or we run away. But some of us have a totally other experience. And let's be clear, I'll define compersion in a moment, but we can feel compersion and jealousy at the same time. So you might go into a threat response and feel jealousy and simultaneously experience some joy for your partner's joy. So compersion it's a word that was coined back in the 90s, but it's not in the dictionary yet, though we keep banging on the doors of the dictionary asking. But if you look up the definition in the psychological literature, you'll see it usually is applied in a non-monogamous context to mean joy for my partner's joy in their other relationships, even if those relationships have nothing to do with me. But the latest entry on compersion into the psychological literature, this is Sharon Flicker and Dr. Marie Tuen. They made an entry that also continues that. The third part of the entry says compersion is actually an emotion that can be felt by anyone, that is this feeling of joy for someone else's pleasure, for their experiences being positive. So it's much more like the Buddhist concept of mudita, sympathetic joy. And I love having access to this word, because just adding the word compersion to your internal lexicon lets you then access, like, well, what if I am experiencing some level of jealousy in my partnership, and at the same time, I am happy that my partner is getting a need met. And I can make this really simple, because it doesn't have to be about, oh, I have to be happy that my partner is having sex with someone else. We don't even have to go that far. I have a partner who is a scientist. He loves talking about topics that bore many people, right? They're very mathematically oriented. It's great if you're into that sort of thing, but wow, he's often not seen fully, right? So if I'm across the room from him and I see him engaging with a woman who I know he would find attractive, and she is clearly loving the conversation they're having, and I can see his thermodynamics face from across the room, I know he's talking about thermodynamics. I know it's relatively boring, but she's seeing him. I can experience that sympathetic joy, that compersiveness, because he's getting his need for feeling valued and special and seen and being seen and heard. Those are all attachment needs. He's getting that need met, and I'm not the one meeting it. And so I can simultaneously be like, ooh, I'm also feeling some squiggles of jealousy. Maybe I'm feeling some prickles, some heat, some knots in my tummy, and simultaneously feel compersive. I can hold both of those things at the same time.
Such a wonderful example of kind of like, again, thinking about the emotions are not black and white. And right. I know some people want to be at the place of compersion, like it makes their life so much easier, especially around sex. People open right. up their relationship that like they feel like logically they made the commitment. But is it something you can cultivate? Like, is it just like a skill?
Yeah. So I love that there is research happening right now on this. It's really important that we look more closely, because the first thing to say is, yes, we can cultivate compersion, and it's also not required. And in fact, there's some early data. I just did an interview just last night with a researcher who had expected to find some research saying, hey, if you have compersion, you'll have higher relationship satisfaction. And their data is showing preliminarily that actually, no, they're not correlated. So you can have high relationship satisfaction even if you don't feel compersion. But compersion is yummy. It feels like a milkshake. It's yummy. It feels good. So if I want to cultivate compersion, there are elements. Dr. Marie Tuen's work speaks really beautifully to this. She talks about how cultivating compersion starts with cultivating compassion for yourself and making sure that you can be present to your emotions, but also having a community that supports the values of openness and of more love, having more support, not being just tied to one person. Because if all of your needs are being met by one person, that's a lot of pressure to put on that relationship. It also really, really helps if you have built a broader community of people to talk about how you do your relationships and how you build your life. So we want to have an ecosystem that allows for and facilitates a compersive attitude. In other words, if you're feeling a little bit of jealousy and you go to somebody, a friend who's very monogamously minded, and you're like, so I know I agreed to this non-monogamy thing and I really want to feel compersive, but my partner's out and I'm just feeling really stressed. If the person you turn to says, yeah, well, of course, this is stupid. Monogamy is the only solution, right? If they get defensive for you, that's not going to support your building compersion. So it really does rely on the idea that you're going to need to build a community that can support you in working the muscle of compersion. And we should also sort it out. Compersion, sometimes we just have the attitude of compersion. We're like, yep, I am physiologically not feeling compersion. My body is not feeling it, but my head is. My mind is. I think positive thoughts about this. Maybe my body will catch up over time. Maybe it won't. And if we sort that out, sometimes we can offer ourselves just, again, more compassion for, yeah, the compersion will come with time.
Also, I know that for many people, jealousy, as you said, it has negative connotation. They feel small when they feel jealous. And logically, kind of their logical mind, that's something they don't want. So they know maybe in the relationship, this is not what's happening. They maybe know it's their previous pain. But how do you recommend people to navigate that? Because I think it's important to validate your emotion. But if you're feeling overly jealous, it can impact your sexual experiences. It can shut you down, kind of stop arousal and all the exciting thing that can happen. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wish I could gift people the ability to feel into how jealousy can be arousing. Not everyone does. In my studies, about 30% of people experience jealousy as arousing. So if you do, yay, like lucky you. So I happen to be a person who experiences jealousy as arousing. I did an interview recently with a client who didn't originally feel the jealousy was arousing, but cultivated that over time. She built it into her fantasies and allowed herself to feel a level of safety, like her partner was returning to her, coming home, but she could also enjoy the, oh, he's away. This is a little unsafe. This is a little risky. This feels scary. And she cultivated holding those two feelings together while experiencing pleasure, right? If we pleasure stack things, we can often build a sense of pleasure around something that hasn't felt good. Now, for other people, yeah, that negative connotation, that judgment that we have about the emotion of jealousy, it really gets us, right? And so I want to turn to my meaning-making function at that point. So I'm a Jungian psychologist. I'll always go to the meaning. If I can understand how my jealousy right now, it has a story built around it that says jealousy means something's wrong with me. I'm not good enough. My partner's going to leave me. If it gets me into this really self-negative place, well, I have an opportunity there to work on myself. But first, I'm going to need to be really gentle, like really, really gentle, and move slowly and untangle that sense of badness, right? I'm going to need to allow myself to feel the jealousy. I'm going to have to work with it slowly. Generally speaking, in my experience, this takes years of being patient with, okay, I'm feeling jealousy. What's the story I'm telling myself about this jealousy? And I will have people say, like, write down all the things that this jealousy means about you. What are the negative statements that you're hearing in your head? And then I'll do some parts work around this too, where I say, like, well, someone in there feels like jealousy is very bad. Who is it? And I want to get to know them. What's the story they have about jealousy? And if I do enough of that work over a period of a year or two, often it makes space for there to be a more nuanced understanding of jealousy. And now jealousy can show up. And one, I can tell the difference between jealousy that means, yeah, I need to dialogue with my partner, and jealousy that's just showing up because I have jealousy, just like sometimes anger shows up and I have anger. And if I can be gentle with myself in that time, then I have the opportunity to potentially experience my jealousy without any judgment. What if I just experience the jealousy and I no longer have that negative judgment? That's a game changer. I often receive a call from people, yeah, like a year into their work, and they're like, I don't think I'm a bad person when I'm jealous anymore. That's it. That's what I was looking for. It's not that they actually needed the jealousy to go away. They needed their self-judgment to go away.
And I love that you're kind of like putting it as a journey, that people can kind of go on this journey and kind of see what feels right in their body. And I wonder if part of this jealousy is like intergenerational trauma, right? I'll tell you this story that which kind of makes sense in that context. I remember when I was a child, my grandmother was telling the tale of her own grandmother to me. Like we grew up in Iran, there was polygamy. She was saying that how she observed her mother in this loving relationship and everything was about her husband. And one day the husband went and married a younger woman, and her grandmother, I guess, like I'm pretty shortening the story, died from grief. So it kind of makes sense that generation after that, I said, like, I'm going to have my partner in a tight leash.
Yes.
Hoping that no one else can see them. Which I know that, like, even if you are in a non-monogamous relationship, people fall in love, things happen in life. So that leash wouldn't do anything. But there was a function there, kind of like this security of, if I do this, this will never happen to me again. And I think sometimes our stories, and history tells us those stories.
Oh, it is. What a fantastic, I can't believe how aligned this is. I literally just finished recording a podcast on betrayal and how, you know, betrayal can happen in any context, like monogamy, non-monogamy, it doesn't matter, because betrayal is about a violation of your expectation. And what I'm hearing resonates really deeply with me, because I have people show up in my office all the time who they're really struggling with their non-monogamy because their grown-up mature self is like, I have chosen this for a reason. But somewhere in their past, often in their childhood, they were exposed to profound betrayal. And so they had told themselves they would never allow that in their life. And so now they're experiencing this schism, and it's an actual fragmentation of their psyche where they're like, well, I cannot allow my partner to be with other people because that's me replicating this horrifying intergenerational trauma story I do not want to keep replicating. And at the same time, they know that non-monogamy isn't that betrayal because it's about being conscious and about agreements. But getting those parts of you to actually align and not be gritting, you know, not be hurting each other, that is incredibly meaningful and challenging work. Like, that is why, for me, non-monogamy isn't for everyone. No one should do it if they don't want to. Neither is monogamy. Monogamy doesn't work for everyone either. But whatever path you're going to choose, allow it to be effortful. It's okay if it takes effort for you to live it comfortably. Because what you're telling me, that story makes me think, not only would I not want non-monogamy in that case, I might be like, yep, okay, my husband's going to be on a short leash. But also, I can imagine being hypervigilant. So hypervigilant that, in fact, I start squashing the passion between us. I might start making so much constriction around my partner that he no longer feels like he can even just live his life and look around. And that might actually kill our sexual connection. And that's not my intention, but that's exactly the impact that intergenerational trauma has. It has unintended consequences. So often we have to unpack that for ourselves, because otherwise we're looking to control the situation rather than to be able to live resiliently in the situation.
And controlling kills passion unless you are into like power dynamic, it's right. Negotiated. But for most of my clients, I know that anxiety that we have in like in the realm of relationship, like keeping our agreement, like what our partner does, that is exactly what you said, that kills passion. So I could talk to you about this for hours. I know you have your TED Talk. You have so many great content. So if our listeners want to hear more about the content you produce out there, what are some of the places they can go?
Yeah. So I would have anyone who's interested in jealousy, go to jealousyroadmap.com and download. I have the 5 steps that I outlined earlier, like they're all in one place for you. So go there, grab that. And then if you want to follow me on social media, I'm at Dr. Jolie_Hamilton. Easy to find me on TikTok, Instagram, all the places.
Well, I can't wait to check out more of your content. I already looked at some of them, but it seems like you're doing a very meaningful work. And thank you so much for coming on this show and being so generous with the information that you provided us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's wrapping our chat with Dr. Jolie Hamilton about the tricky but important topic of sexual jealousy. One key thing to remember is how tough it can be to talk about feeling jealous without pointing fingers at our partners. It's a fine line to walk, but sharing these feelings openly can be a big step towards healing and growth. For instance, picture this. You're feeling jealous because your partner seems super close with someone else. Instead of saying, you're spending too much time with them and makes me feel like you don't care about me, try sharing your feeling without the blaming game. Something like, I've been feeling a bit insecure about the time you've been hanging out with your friend. I know it's my thing, and I love to chat about how we can deal with this together. This approach sets the stage for a supportive conversation, making it easier for your partner to join in without feeling attacked. Oh, and big shout out to our sponsor, Mira, before we sign off. If you're keen on getting a deeper look into your fertility and hormonal health, Miro's tech provides precise and personalized data. Their tailored consultations allow you to check out your fertility and hormone health details, create a customized plan to boost your fertility, and get guidance on improving your habits and lifestyle. Book a session to up your chances of getting pregnant quicker and make informed choices about your fertility journey. And remember, to use our code Dr. Mualli at checkout for a cool 17% of Mira Monitor and fertility consultations. Thanks for hanging out with us today, and be sure to catch us next time for more tips on boosting your relationships and sexual health.
Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.